I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
So, figures are talking about the need for 600 trucks per day for 6 weeks to alleviate some of the first needs. I think we are not yet there yet.
International human rights groups say far more aid needs to be urgently allowed into Gaza as Israel continues to limit the number of truck deliveries. We'll look at the ceasefire hostage deal with Stanford Professor Emeritus Joel Bainin. Hamas held his niece Liat hostage in Gaza in 2023 for 54 days, her husband killed. Plus, we speak to Lindsay Boylan. She became the first of 11 women to publicly accuse her boss, then New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, of sexual harassment. Lindsay Boylan is now backing Zohran Mamdani in the New York mayoral race over Cuomo.
Andrew Cuomo abused his power over me and so many other women who worked for him. I worked for him for years at a high level, and he abused the trust of New Yorkers in doing so, and he will do it again. One kind of abuse of power, abuser does it in every possible way, and that is why it is so important that Andrew Cuomo cannot become mayor, and I'm working so hard alongside so many others to make sure that's the case.
But first, we speak to Rutgers University historian Mark Bray. He's just moved his family to Spain after receiving death threats over his research on anti-fascism. This comes weeks after President Trump designated the anti-fascist movement known as Antifa to be a terrorist organization, even though Antifa is not actually an organization. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Pressure's growing on Israel to allow more aid into Gaza as the ceasefire continues to hold. On Tuesday, Israel told the United Nations that it would allow only half the 600 daily aid trucks called for under the deal. Israel had accused Hamas of moving too slowly to release the bodies of dead captives as part of the deal. On Tuesday night, Hamas handed over four more bodies. Israel said three of the bodies have been identified, but the fourth did not match any of the known hostages. Meanwhile, Israel has returned the remains of 45 deceased Palestinians. Health officials in Gaza say the bodies arrived with their hands and legs cuffed. In a statement, Nasser Hospital said, quote, some are blindfolded. There are signs of gunshot wounds in some cases, while others have been run over by tanks, they said. This comes as negotiations have begun for the second phase of President Trump's 20-point plan. On Tuesday, Trump threatened the United States would disarm Hamas if the group doesn't do so itself.
But we have told them we want to disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm.
In other news from Gaza, the group Handicap International's warning, Palestinians face enormous risk from unexploded bombs and mines. The group estimates Israel dropped more than 70,000 tons of explosives on Gaza over the past 2 years. Amazon has fired a software engineer who criticized the company's work with Israel. Ahmed Sharour had publicly opposed Project Nimbus, Amazon's $1.2 billion cloud computing project that Israel's used to store surveillance information on the Gazan population. In Italy, more than 10,000 protesters marched for Palestinian rights Tuesday ahead of a World Cup qualifying soccer match between Italy and Israel. Police fired water cannons and tear gas to disperse the crowd. Italy won the game 3-0. In Chicago, ICE agents were involved in a high-speed chase to pursue a person. The federal agents then arrested the individual in a residential street when protesters gathered in the area. ICE agents used tear gas to disperse the crowd. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker called the treatment of the protesters abominable, saying they were simply holding signs and expressing themselves, unquote. Meanwhile, Facebook is suspending a popular Chicago-area ICE sighting group at the Trump administration's request. The group has been used over the past month during Operation Midway Blitz to warn neighbors when ICE agents are near schools, grocery stores, and other community locations. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, county officials voted on Tuesday to declare a state of emergency over immigration raids.
We will be urging our colleagues today to declare a state of emergency because what's happening across Los Angeles County is an emergency. It may not be a wildfire or an earthquake, but it is a man-made emergency created by our own federal government. ICE raids are spreading fear and confusion in every corner of our county.
The U.S. State Department says it's revoking the visas of six foreign nationals over social media comments they made about the assassination of the conservative activist Charlie Kirk. On X, the State Department posted, quote, "The United States has no obligation to host foreigners who wish death on Americans." The State Department continues to identify visa holders who celebrated the heinous assassination of Charlie Kirk, unquote. The thread then went on to list examples of posts by the foreigners, identifying them as citizens of Argentina, Brazil, Germany, Mexico, Paraguay, and South Africa. It comes as President Trump posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Charlie Kirk during a White House Rose Garden ceremony Tuesday. Leaked Telegram messages published by Politico show leaders of young Republican groups from New York, Kansas, Arizona, and Vermont sharing racist, sexist, anti-Semitic, violent language and praise for Hitler in more than 28,000 messages over 7 months. One message by Joe Maligno, the general counsel for the New York State Young Republicans, read, quote, "Can we fix the showers? Gas chambers don't fit the Hitler aesthetic," unquote. Another message by Peter Gunta, the chair of the New York State Young Republicans, who was responding to chat members watching an NBA playoff game, read, quote, "I'd go to the zoo if I wanted to watch monkey play ball," unquote. In response to the leaking of the messages, Vice President J.D. Vance posted on X, "I refuse to join the pearl clutching." Arizona's attorney general is threatening legal action if House Speaker Mike Johnson continues to delay the swearing-in of Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva. In a statement, Attorney General Chris Mays said, quote, "We are keeping every option open to us, including litigation, to hold him accountable and make sure that Adelita is able to begin her work as Arizona's newest member of Congress," unquote. Grijalva would be the final 218th vote on a discharge petition to release the Epstein files. Last week, Speaker Johnson was asked whether he was delaying Grijalva's swearing in over the Epstein files, to which he replied, quote, "It has nothing to do with that at all," unquote. The federal government shutdown has entered its 15th day. On Tuesday, the Senate failed again to pass a funding bill as Republicans continue to refuse to agree to extend expiring health care subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. President Trump's threatening to cut more funding for projects in Democratic-led areas if the shutdown continues. According to the New York Times, the Trump administration's already frozen or canceled over $27 billion projects in Democratic-led areas. In other news from Capitol Hill, Congressional Democrats are pushing new legislation to fully fund the Supplemental Nutrition Program, WIC, the Women, Infants, and Children Program. Amidst the government shutdown that's furloughed tens of thousands of workers here in the United States, President Trump has offered a $20 billion bailout for Argentina. Earlier this year, Argentina's far-right president, Javier Milei, attended the conservative CPAC conference in the U.S., where he gifted billionaire Elon Musk a chainsaw. On Tuesday, Trump hosted Milei at the White House and conditioned Argentina's bailout funds on Milei's party winning legislative elections this month.
We're going to work very much with the president. We think he's going to win. He should win. And if he does win, we're going to be very helpful. And if he doesn't win, we're not going to waste our time, because you have somebody whose philosophy has no chance of making Argentina great again.
This comes as critics point out that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent's friends, who lead major hedge funds, including BlackRock, Fidelity, and PIMCO, are heavily invested in Argentina and would benefit financially. Reuters is reporting China's buying at least 10 cargoes of Argentine soybeans after Argentina removed grain export taxes. The move further shuts out U.S. soybean farmers from the Chinese market as the U.S. threatens 100% tariffs on China. Caleb Ragland, a farmer and president of the American Soybean Association, told Reuters, quote, every time China turns to South America instead of the U.S., soybean farmers and our farm families here at home lose out. Without a trade deal that removes retaliatory tariffs, farmers like me are left watching key opportunities slip away. A third of U.S. soybeans were being sold to China. President Trump announced in a post on Truth Social that the U.S. has attacked another boat allegedly carrying drugs near Venezuela, killing six people. It's the fifth deadly strike on boats in the Caribbean since September. It comes weeks after an internal Trump administration memo classified drug cartels as non-state armed groups whose actions constitute an unarmed attack against the United States. NBC News is reporting congressional lawmakers from both parties are growing frustrated about the lack of information about the strikes. One source told NBC, quote, the Republicans were mad that the briefers were unable to answer questions about the legal basis for the operations, unquote. Five major broadcast news outlets have refused to sign the Pentagon's new press policy by Tuesday's deadline. The policy states media outlets and reporters cannot obtain any information that the Pentagon does not explicitly authorize. Fox News, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's former employer, stated they will not sign on to the new press policy. In a joint statement, NBC News, ABC News, CBS News, CNN, and Fox News all said, quote, we join virtually every other news organization in declining to agree to the Pentagon's new requirements, which would restrict journalists' ability to keep the nation and the world informed of important national security issues, unquote. In Madagascar, an elite military unit says it seized power after weeks of Gen Z-led protests led to the ouster of the president, Andry Rajoelina. Reuters reports the president left Madagascar Sunday aboard a French military aircraft. A crackdown on dissent by military forces killed at least 22 people, according to the UN. The army colonel reportedly announced a committee led by the military would rule the country for up to 2 years, instituting a transitional government before calling new elections. On Tuesday, protesters celebrated the military's takeover.
The military's stance is something we have been waiting for a very long time. First, there was the gendarmerie and all that, fighting alongside the government. Meanwhile, we saw that the people were at the end of their tether. It was truly wonderful that the army took part in the people's demands.
A new investigation by Reuters has concluded the former Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad secretly moved tens of thousands of bodies to hide evidence of mass killings. Between 2019 and 21, the Syrian government removed bodies from a mass grave in al-Qataifa and then reburied them in a secret site in the desert east of Damascus. The project was done as Assad attempted to regain his international standing. Tens of thousands of Kaiser Permanente nurses, pharmacists, midwives, rehab therapists, and other frontline medical staff are going on strike. Organizers say the five-day strike across 500 medical centers and offices in California, Hawaii, and Oregon could be the largest in the history of the United Nurses Associations of California Union of Healthcare Professionals. They're asking for a 25% increase in salaries over 4 years, claiming wages have not kept up with inflation. Here's pharmacist Jackie Hua.
During COVID, we were called heroes with capes on. But now that COVID is over, you know, we're being thrown under the bus. We're being told, no, We don't want to negotiate anymore. We don't want to come to the table and negotiate anymore and give you guys a contract.
The pioneering transgender activist Miss Major Griffin Gracie has died at the age of 78. In 1969, she took part in the Stonewall Uprising that launched the modern LGBT rights movement. For more than five decades, she was a tireless advocate for the black trans community and trans people behind bars. Kiara Johnson, president of the National LGBTQ Task Force, said, quote, she was a revolutionary, a visionary, a legend, a foundational mother of our movement, and an inspiration to those fighting for liberation. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with the war on Antifa that the Trump administration's ratcheted up in the aftermath of the conservative activist Charlie Kirk being assassinated last month. Yesterday, President Trump posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Charlie Kirk at a ceremony in the White House Rose Garden. Trump recently signed an executive order purporting to designate Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization, even though it's not really an organization. Antifa is actually a shortening of the term anti-fascist and is a term that arose in Europe for the movement against the Nazis both before and after World War II. The decentralized movement in the U.S. today draws on this history. Several high-level Republicans have accused this Saturday's No King's Day protests of being organized by Antifa. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi said last week the administration will take the, quote, same approach to Antifa as it has to drug cartels it's bombed in the Caribbean. This is Bondi on Fox News last night.
And that's one of the things about Antifa. You've heard President Trump say multiple times they are organized, they are a criminal organization, and they're very organized. You're seeing people out there with thousands of signs that all match, pre-bought, pre-put together. They're organized and someone is funding it.
This comes as Los Angeles County officials voted Tuesday to declare a state of emergency over ongoing federal immigration raids they say have, quote, caused widespread fear, unquote. Violent attacks by federal agents at protests against immigrant raids have also been documented in Chicago and Portland. On Tuesday, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson said if he would call for more oversight of federal agents, he responded by complaining about a naked bike ride protest against ICE in Portland, Oregon, which Trump has called a war zone.
To demand oversight on federal law enforcement? Well, I've not seen them cross the line yet, and that we have committees of jurisdiction who have that responsibility, but it's not risen to that level. What I've seen is the abuse of law enforcement by radical leftist activists. Most recently, the most threatening thing I've seen yet was the naked bicyclers in Portland who were protesting ICE down there. I mean, it's getting really ugly.
Experts are increasingly raising concerns the Trump administration's attacks on Antifa are ungrounded in fact and law and violate free speech rights. For more, we're joined by someone who knows a lot about all of this. Mark Bray is a Rutgers University history professor, author of the 2017 book Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. Last week, he was forced to leave his home in New Jersey and move to Spain with his family after receiving death threats following Trump's push to categorize the anti-fascist movement as a domestic terrorist organization. Charlie Kirk's group, Turning Point USA, had also circulated a petition labeling him Dr. Antifa and calling for him to be fired. In a remarkable development, Bray was at first blocked from flying out of the United States last week. He wrote on Blue Sky, "Someone canceled my family's flight out of the country at the last second. We got our boarding passes, we checked our bags, went through security, then at our gate reservation, disappeared. They later took another flight," and Professor Mark Bray joins us now from Spain. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm sorry you've gone through all this, Professor Bray. If you can start off by talking about why you left the country and what happened as we tried to follow what was happening to you at the airport.
Right. So I published this book, Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook, in 2017. I'm actually researching different historical topics now. But after Trump's executive order, a series of far-right trolls online, influencers, started attacking me. I received a number of death threats. Someone published my home address on X. So I started to feel fear for the safety of my family, staying in our home. More and more death threats came in, and I knew I needed to get away. Getting to another country, getting across the ocean would make us feel much more comfortable. As you said, our first flight was mysteriously canceled at the last moment. My two small children were sobbing. We had to regroup the next day.
I just want to ask, when you say your flight was canceled, you went to, what was it, Newark Airport or Kennedy?
Yes.
And you got your boarding passes and you went through security. So you were all set. And you got to the gate, and what did they tell you?
Well, there was an error. They had to step to the side to talk to the United worker at the desk. There were a series of phone calls and mumbling, and they basically said at the last moment, someone had canceled our reservation, not the whole flight, just for the four of us, for me, my wife, and our two small children. And this is around the same time that Andy Ngo and Jack Posobiec, two of the far-right provocateurs who had been harassing me online, were meeting in the White House with President Trump to discuss Antifa. I just can't believe it's a coincidence.
And yet you were able to rebook the next day, and you made it through security, and you actually made it onto the flight?
Well, this time I was stopped, searched, and interrogated by federal agents for an hour. And at one point, they took me into a side room, and my two kids saw what looked like were very bad men taking me in another room. They started sobbing. So it was quite an ordeal, even the next day. But I made it out. And frankly, I'm very fearful about the potential of returning. But hopefully, by next year, things will improve.
I mean, this is astounding. You weren't trying to come into the United States. You were trying to leave, and you are an American citizen. Not that that should have mattered.
And I'm not being charged with any crimes. If anything, I'm the victim of crimes. I wrote a book 8 years ago. I consider myself politically an anti-fascist. I detest fascism, but I'm not a member of any Antifa group. I'm a professor. I'm a dad. I'm just trying to live my life here. But of course, because the far right is trying to create a boogeyman term in Antifa to equate protests with terrorism, I got caught up in the middle of this.
So you are the author, Professor Bray, of Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. If you can explain what Antifa is and what it means for President Trump to have issued this executive order, calling it a domestic terrorist organization, is it even an organization? Talk about Antifa now and through history.
Right. So, as you said, it's a term that is short for anti-fascist or anti-fascism. It's originally German, from the era of opposition to Hitler. After World War II, anti-fascism continued throughout the world, and the specific European tradition of what they called Antifa spread to other countries around the world. For example, in the U.S., you had anti-racist action in the 80s and 90s, which was a network of decentralized groups across the continent organizing against the far right. The term Antifa really kind of made its appearance in the U.S. In the late 2000s, but it's not an organization. It's more of a politics or a movement. I liken it to feminism sometimes. There are feminist groups, but feminism itself is not a group. There are Antifa groups, but Antifa itself is not a group. It's just sort of like a more of a verb. It's a thing you do to organize against the far right in decentralized groups. Trump, of course, doesn't care about any of that. It's a useful boogeyman term to demonize protests, demonize resistance, equate it with terrorism. And it's really, you know, an obvious page out of the textbooks about fascist and authoritarian leaders. It's such an obvious imitation of, you know, the kind of the Red Scare talk about communism, but applied to today.
It's very interesting you've moved to Spain. I mean, for years we've covered the Abraham Lincoln Brigadistas Brigade, those Americans who went to Spain, where you are now, to fight against the fascist Franco. Many of them died. Many of them came back. And this was just before World War II. They were the most experienced, presumably, in fighting. But when a number of them signed up to fight in World War II, to fight Hitler,
They were labeled premature anti-fascists. Can you talk about that? And they were not allowed to fight in World War II.
Right. So there were a lot of activists and leftists in the U.S. and around the world who realized the threat of Hitler well before mainstream society. And a number of them journeyed over to Spain to fight in the international brigades. A significant number of them lost their lives. Some of them returned. They were blacklisted in the U.S. And it's also worth pointing out that a number of Spanish Civil War veterans from other countries who ended up going to France after the Spanish Civil War played important roles in the French underground, and there was a tank battalion of Spanish anarchists that were among the first to liberate Paris in 1945. It's a fascinating history. It's one that I teach a course on the Spanish Civil War. So it is strange to sort of have these things twisted around, and I ended up going to Spain because I'm a historian of Spain. But I've received a lot of solidarity and support from the social movements here. And actually, there's a general strike today in Spain for Palestine as well, just to throw into your news report.
We had you on last in 2017 to discuss your book, Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook, when it first came out. In the introduction, you wrote you hoped your work would promote organizing against fascism and white supremacy. Can you elaborate?
Right. So anti-fascism has a broad history. In the U.S., certainly there's the European-inspired Antifa tradition. There's also a really good book called The Black Anti-Fascist Tradition that talks about the role of anti-fascism in Black liberation struggles, Black Panthers and so forth, which I suggest people check out. So it takes many different forms. What it has in common is actually this impulse towards unity and putting aside the differences that often divide the left in the interest of promoting the common struggle against fascism, against white supremacy. And what we're seeing today in the U.S. is increasingly fascist. MAGA, I believe, and I study fascism, I don't say this lightly, is a fascist movement. And if we don't organize, if we don't take action in the streets, we're going to end up somewhere really bad. And for me personally, I felt like my situation was such that I had to get my family out of harm's way. But this story about me is about me, but it's not really about me. It's about attacks on academic freedom, free speech, the right to protest. We're in a really dangerous situation. And so everyone in their own way needs to take action to try and organize against this.
I mean, it's interesting. You remind me of Timothy Snyder, as well as Jason Stanley, the two Yale professors who also left the country. They've gone to Canada to teach, both having written books against fascism and tyranny. I wanted to ask you about U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi's comments, saying the administration will take the, quote, same approach to Antifa as it has to drug cartels. It's bombed in the Caribbean. The latest bombing, I think, took place yesterday, killing a number of people. Even Republican politicians behind closed doors are saying, where is the evidence for who these people are who've been killed by the U.S. bombs? Mark Bray, your response to Pam Bondi.
Right. Well, the paradox of fascism is that while it's trying to gain power, it talks about the need for law and order. And to the degree that it gains power, it tramples all over the law. It does not care about the law or legality, due process, civil liberties. And so this kind of call to murder people in this country without, of course, even having gone through any due process, not that I'm in favor of capital punishment anyway, but that's another story. It is this kind of example of calling for the strong man in Trump to use deadly force without any evidence against people accused of made up crimes that are being equated with, you know, at times some of the Trump administration people have compared it to Antifa, to ISIS, to Antifa. Right. So to me, it's really this kind of fascist attack on civil liberties. And if they're equating protesters with Antifa and they're saying that they're going to use the methods used for the people in the boats in the Caribbean on Antifa, the implication is they are ready to kill American protesters. And you know, we know the history of Kent State, right, where students were gunned down in the 60s. It could happen again if we're not careful. So we really need to be very vigilant about this.
Do you think progressive groups, groups that care about democracy, free speech, across the political spectrum, are pushing back enough around the attack on anti-fascists?
Well, you know, I think there's always room for more action. And I think that my main takeaway for viewers today is that whether or not you consider yourself an anti-fascist, anyone who has any critiques of Trump is potentially in the crosshairs here, because there's a concerted project from the top to equate protests with terrorism and to say anyone who's not a Trump supporter is basically the equivalent of ISIS. You can't make this stuff up. It's absolutely ridiculous. They don't care at all about grounding in fact or information. It's something that plays to their base and justifies attempts to step beyond due process to use apparently lethal force against dissidents. This is terrifying. And so everyone really needs to do what they can to sound the alarm.